is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Hundreds turned out Saturday to mourn the Coptic Christians killed during a minibus attack outside a monastery in the southern Egyptian town of Minya day earlier. Many survivors of the attack, mostly women and children, were transported to Cairo, where they're being treated for gunshot wounds. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Families of the victims wailed and sobbed as the coffins of their loved ones were carried through the streets of Minya towards the Prince Tadros Church, where they were eulogized and mourned. Inside the church, Coptic clerics spoke of forgiveness and hope as families grieved for the departed loved ones laid out in a row of white coffins near the front of the church. The leader of Egypt's Coptic Christian community, Pope Tewodros, told his followers that the attack was meant to sow division and that the best response was to avoid recrimination.
It's Edward Uranian reporting for VOA News in Cairo. The U.S. national elections are nearing, and fears are growing that Russian efforts to undermine the American democracy could affect the U.S. military, in addition to any effort to affect the election outcome. Meantime, U.S. President Trump has been on the campaign trail, saying the opposition Democrats would reverse the country's economic momentum.
If they take power, they will try to erase our gains and eradicate our progress. Can't let that happen. The Democrats want to raise your taxes. They want to restore job-killing regulations. They want to shut down your steel mills, and that will happen.
The president was campaigning in the state of Indiana. U.S. former U.S. President Barack Obama was also campaigning for Democrats in key states. This is VOA News. Indonesian officials say a diver has died while recovering body parts from the wreckage of a Lion Air flight that crashed into the Java Sea just minutes after taking off Monday from Jakarta. Indonesian Navy divers have recovered one of the so-called black boxes from the wreckage, which contained crucial information on the plane's brief flight. Divers recovered the flight data recorder Thursday. They're still searching for the cockpit voice recorder. All 189 people on board were killed. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says the order to kill Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi came from the highest levels of the Saudi government. He added he does not believe the Saudi king had anything to do with the murder. Daniel Bolson of Amnesty International says Saudi Arabia cannot act with impunity.
Just as they have messages for those who defend human rights, we have messages for them. For too long, they've operated under the impression that impunity is for them and that the rules are for others.
After initially denying that Khashoggi had been murdered, the Saudi government claimed that he died in an unplanned rogue operation. A Saudi public prosecutor offered a different explanation last week when he said the killing was premeditated. U.S. President Trump calls the migrant caravan moving toward the United States' southern border an invasion, a view the International Organization for Migration does not share. U.S. defense officials tell VOA that the number of troops dispatched to intercept them has grown to more than 8,000. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA. Again, the International Organization for Migration says this organized caravan is an annual event and does not believe the migrants pose a threat.
IOM spokesman Joel Millman tells VOA barriers and militarized borders tend not to deter border crossings. They tend to support criminalized organizations.
We know from the rising number of deaths on borders around the world what militarization means to the individuals who are crossing and the risks they're adding and the dangers. And we know that it feeds the profits of the smugglers, so we oppose it for many reasons. This would be no exception. Militarizing the border is not something we're ever in favor of.
While most of the migrants are continuing their relentless march toward the United States, many are dropping out of the caravan. The UN Migration Agency says exhaustion and the challenges ahead are causing many migrants to voluntarily accept offers from Mexico and Honduras to help them return home. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
At least there will be a statue for Mr. Gandhi on the Malawian soil, but definitely not on the spot that is being proposed now.
Indian Vice President begins state official visit to Malawi Sunday.
Why did the people fight for independence? And what if, when decisions are made by a small group of people who are not even using market signals, so what if they make mistakes? What will happen? you know, who is going to be held accountable?
Opposition groups in Tanzania say the government uses state institutions to harass and intimidate critics.
Sitting Botswana government president is extremely powerful. The current president can make life very hard for the former president, and I think they are both aware of it.
And former Botswana president Seretse Khama Iyankama is unhappy with his successor, President Mokgweetsi Masisi. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Indian Vice President Venkaiah Naidu is scheduled to begin a state official visit to Malawi on Sunday. His visit comes amid controversy surrounding the $10 million development deal with the Malawian government, which includes erecting a statue to honor Mahatma Gandhi in the commercial capital Blantyre. But civil society and opposition groups are kicking against the statue, saying the former Indian leader was a racist. But the Malawian government says it recognizes Gandhi's importance in the fight against colonialism in India and Africa. For more on the opposition to the edifice, I reach former Malawian Vice President Dr. Kasim Chulumpa in the capital, Lilongwe.
Let me point out that some of us are very, very opposed to the statue for a number of reasons. Firstly, in Malawi, there is a tradition and culture that we have established to honor people who have distinguished themselves, like Mr. Mahatma Gandhi. And as I am speaking now, there is a road that has been named after Mr. Mahatma Gandhi. And that culture, we believe, needs to be promoted. Even Dr. Kamuzu Banda himself doesn't have a statue in a prominent place like the one that is being proposed at this point in time. Even some of the Malawians that were prominent in the struggle for Malawi to gain its independence do not have a statue. So the question we are asking is, why a statue for Mr. Mahatma Gandhi, who has done absolutely nothing that an ordinary Malawian can point a finger at? This is really the issue that we think needs to be properly and rationally addressed by those who are proposing that a statue of this nature be constructed at the site that has been chosen.
Some Malawians are saying that this is a $10 million development deal which will help the people of Malawi, particularly those in the commercial capital Blantyre. So why should Malawians kick against this development that is vital to the city's economic progress?
No, I don't think that there is any Malawian who objects to any activity that promotes the development of Malawi. There is no Malawian who is refusing, any assistance to help the status and position of Blantyre as a city. The issue is about a statue and Malawi tradition. Malawi does not honor outstanding people by building statues for them. As I have said, that we have a standing tradition, which is to name outstanding people, to name roads after outstanding people, to name buildings after outstanding people, to name various items of infrastructure after important people, including Dr. Kamuzu Banda. There is no statue for him. What we have done to honor him as our founding president is to name some of our infrastructure using his name. That's what we have done. Now, constructing a statue for someone is a new development. Taking, memorialization of individuals to a different level. And the question we're asking is, why Mr. Gandhi in particular? And nobody is giving any sensible and rational answer to that question.
But Dr. Chulumpa, the government officials are saying that this is to memorialize Dr. Gandhi's struggle against former colonial power Britain, which should be recognized, as well as his push to have the entire African continent colonialists free. And that is why they want to do this.
Well, I mean, these people are thinking very shallowly about it. I am saying our founding president, Dr. Kamuzu Banda, over 30 years ago, recognized Mr. Gandhi as an outstanding individual and named a road in the city of Blantyre after Mr. Mahatma Gandhi. Malawi does recognize Mr. Gandhi, and we don't think that the way to recognize him is to do something that is un-Malawian, because to put up statues in the name of individuals is un-Malawian, and that's what we're objecting to. But recognizing Mr. Gandhi, that we already did over 30 years ago by naming a road after Mr. Mahatma Gandhi.
Apart from the court injunction that have been placed, some are saying the government seemed to be expediting the construction of the statue. So what recourse do you have to stop this from going forward?
Well, there are other, so many different ways. We will continue talking about it. We will continue to object to the construction of this statue and proceed in the Malawi tradition, in the legal way, until somehow someone will listen. That we hope that when this high official from India comes, we hope that he coming from a democratic tradition, will understand the strong and very, very, very well articulated views that we are putting forward, that we don't want a statue for Mr. Gandhi in Malawi because it is un-Malawian. If it's the culture elsewhere, fine, we accept that. But here in Malawi, we think it is un-Malawian, and we'll continue saying so, even if government expedites it. And we hope that when, sometime in the future, a different government, comes to power in Malawi, we will actually have our view, taken on board at that future date. For now, the present government can continue maybe expediting the construction, but that's not the end of the story. We are opposed to this statute, and we will continue to oppose it, come what may.
Now, will you engage the government to find an amicable solution to this, or you are staunch in your opposition to the construction of the statue at all cost?
No, the point is that, as far as we know, the Indian government and the Malawi government have agreed, to have some land, some place within Blantyre where, I think some agreed project will take place. The amicable way forward will be, in our view, that this statue must be constructed in front of that, on that property, and not where it is proposed to be constructed now. That would be an amicable way. Those who want the statue will have it on private land outside where it is being proposed to construct it now. And those of us who oppose the statue, at least we are given way, because at least there will be a statue for Mr. Gandhi on the Malawian soil, but definitely not on the spot that is being proposed now.
Dr. Kasim Chilumpa is a former Malawian vice president. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe.
Opposition groups in Tanzania expressed concern that the government is using state institutions to harass and intimidate critics and opponents of President John Magufuli. This after opposition parliamentarian Zitto Kabwe was charged with sedition. Local media reports say Kabwe was detained after criticizing the government over murders in his constituency. He was released but expected to appear in court on November 26. The opposition parties say this is yet another indication that the government will use state institutions to suppress dissenting views, accusations the administration sharply denies. For more about the political situation in Tanzania, I reach Professor Xavier Loitama from the Josiah Kibira University College.
Well, the political climate can be characterized as turbulent, though in appearance stable. Stable but turbulent in the sense that on the surface everything is fine. But when you dig deeper, you find that while yesterday top academics were assembled at the University of Dar es Salaam in the presence of the President of the Republic, assessing 3 years of the president's presidency, which is the fifth phase president, the top brass of the main opposition party was at a Kisutu court, you know, the magistrate's court in town, charged on seditious charges, while another prominent was in police custody for the second day without being taken to court.
Some are saying that it appears every critic of the president seem to have legal troubles one way or the other, with some opposition people saying that these are trumped up charges politically motivated to undermine the opposition. What is your take?
You know, the president has quite skillfully managed to create the impression among the general population that everything is fine. But at the same time, there is clamp down on opposition, there is clamp down on alternative views, and one gets the impression that maybe the president feels that you can do more in the economic sphere, especially in terms of building infrastructure, etc., if you have very little opposition, if you are not challenged in how you use the money that comes from the taxpayers. But at the same time, the decisions as to how that money is used are increasingly seen to be made by one individual. That happens to be the president. And that creates some anxiety, you know, because, you know, people fought for independence so that they can have economic progress in freedom.
But Professor Lwaitama, is that the reason why a lot of the president critics are accusing him of being dictatorial?
Of that, whatever language they may use, it's very clear that the decisions that are made, parliaments, a lot of times some of the decisions parliament passed with regard to the budget are not even implemented. In the last 2 years, parliament, when it missed to review how the budget had been approved, you find it's only 30%, 50%, less than 50% of what, how the way the money was used was the way parliament had said it to be used. So it means decisions are being made which are not, coming from even parliament.
Now, Professor Lwaitama, let me ask you this, because I've heard some Tanzanians saying that the democratic credentials of Tanzania is being hampered by the current political temperature in the country with regards to the narrowing of the political space such that the opposition finds it difficult to operate. They even cited instances of violence being meted out against opposition supporters and leaders, including the assassination attempt on the life of Tundu Lissu, a prominent leader of the opposition who was then the president of the Tanganyika Law Society.
Those observations are being made, by a lot of analysts. But the key for me is that we fought for independence so that we may have economic progress in freedom, where every citizen feels that they are part of the major uses and direction in how the money from the taxpayers are used are supposed to be made by through parliament and through debate. And one gets the impression that, the idea is that maybe authoritarian rule sometimes makes it possible for quick decisions and implementation of economic projects. And there is, theoretically you can say there is some merit in that argument. But the trouble is, why did the people fight for independence? And what if, when decisions are made by a small group of people who are not even using market signals, so what if they make mistakes? What will happen? who is going to be held accountable?
Xavery Lwaitama is a professor from the Josiah Kibira University College. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. Former Botswana President Serete Kama Ian Khama is reportedly unhappy with his successor, President Mokgweetsi Masisi. Local media reports say Khama has been denied free air travel, as well as his preferred private secretary, a former director of intelligence. But supporters of the ruling party say the alleged rift is based on rumors by the opposition to undermine the group's unity ahead of next year's election. To learn more about the political situation there, I read Kialebo Hadihutu, a Botswana broadcast journalist in the capital, Habaroni.
Actually, it's a non-issue. We sort of expected it. When he was still vice president, he said something very weird. In our language, he said,
That means it's going to be very nice when I become president. So we sort of expected him to change a lot of policies that the former president did. The former president probably thought he was going to do his bidding. That didn't happen. When the current president came in, he decided to do things his way. And his way goes the way of most middle-class Botswana. And that is what is currently happening. And the former president is not very happy with that.
Well, I understand the former president, Ian Khama, wanted something like air travel and also wanted someone like the former intelligence agency director to be hired as his private secretary. But the current president seemed not to want to endorse that idea. Is that the reason why he's not happy?
It's a very funny thing because it was never going to happen, eh? The current president has a bit of a challenge. He has to deal with the fact that the former intelligence officer, Azekosi, is not very popular. We talked about him in 2015, if you recall well. He's a former private secretary to the former president. So it was always a given that the former president would ask for him as his private secretary because he had been his private secretary before. So we sort of expected that. The issue was always whether we are going to think the current president will allow it for it to happen. It was never going to happen. He's a very unpopular man. He made a lot of people uneasy. And we all think he should be prosecuted. When I say all, I mean both as a journalist and as a citizen.
Are people of Botswana thinking that perhaps the former president miscalculated by choosing this current president to succeed him?
Well, I don't think there's anyone who thinks, look, we all concede and conclude that he sort of miscalculated. He was fooled into this by the current president. We never believed that this gentleman was ever at any point going to do his bidding. Nobody thought that. So how he thought he was going to control the current president, nobody actually understands that. And we begin to wonder how he came to the conclusion that this gentleman was the best person for the job to replace him. Because we never thought he was going to do his bidding. Nobody thought he was going to do his bidding.
There are two things, yes, I'm told, that the people of Botswana will be faced with. Either former President Ian Khama campaigns for this current president during next year's election, or that he decides not to campaign, in the sense, because of the dominance of the ruling party, he still would get a nod to become the president of Botswana. What is your take?
Peter, I made a very bold prediction when I last talked to you. I don't know what you're talking about, but I remember telling you that, look, the ruling party is going to win again in 2019. I still maintain that position. I think the ruling party will win in 2019. I think it matters little whether or not the former president campaigns. He's very powerful in the central part of the country. In America, they would associate this with what they call the Bible Belt. We do have a very strong, you know, sort of constituency. We call it the Central District here in Botswana. I think the former president will cause a lot of damage to the ruling party, but not enough to cause them elections. But he will cause a lot of damage to them in terms of popular vote, in terms of actual vote, because we use first past the post here, which means the more constituencies you get, then you get a presidency. I think that is what is going to happen, but he will cause enough damage to them to show them that he's popular enough. But generally, a sitting Botswana Democratic Party president is extremely powerful. The sitting Botswana government president is extremely powerful. The current president can make life very hard for the former president, and I think they are both aware of it. Masisi has been very nice thus far. I think he will probably get extremely nasty around February when he thinks Khama, the former president, presents a challenge.
Kia Lebo Hadihitso is a Botswana broadcast journalist. He spoke with me from Habaroni.
A new survey conducted in the Democratic Republic of Congo shows that Congolese lack confidence in the chairman of the Electoral Commission to organize credible elections scheduled for December 23. A majority of the respondents say they are displeased with Corneille Nangaa's insistence on using voter machines during the polls. Released this week, the survey was conducted by the Congolese polling firm BESI in conjunction with the Congo Research Group at New York University. For more about the survey findings, I read Francesca Bomboko, the head of the Congolese polling group BESI.
Basically, I mean, the result of the survey showed that the majority of the population do not trust the electoral process as it goes, and fewer also trust the president of the Electoral Commission. You know, he has only 23% of good opinion, which is extremely low. And his negative perception actually doubled from 2016 up until now.
Talk to me about what these respondents talked about, what Mr. Corneille Nangaa is doing specifically that makes him such unpopular ahead of the December 23 elections.
You know, it's interesting. 70% of the people that we survey think that it would not be a good idea to actually introduce electronical votes, and that voting machines that they call stealing vote machines, basically machine à voler, machine à tricher in French, you know, 70% are totally against it. So this is one thing that can explain the negative perceptions of the electoral process and also of Corneille Nangaa. You know, when you ask the population about whether we should delay the election, you know, 66% thinks that the election should not be delayed at all. But they do think, on the other hand, that the electoral registry should be revised to eliminate all the identified problems. And also, the law also, we say in French, la loi de répartition des sièges. Basically, they say that the law that attributes the number of seats, you know, per electoral circumscriptions, should actually also be changed according to the changing of the electoral register. So this is what it is.
So why is the population suspicious of President Joseph Kabila when it comes to the election, particularly when he announced that he is not seeking any election? A ruling party coalition candidate has been chosen to succeed him if the elections were to proceed next month as originally scheduled.
Well, I mean, to that, we didn't specifically ask that question. However, despite the fact that he named Emmanuel Chabary as the candidate for the presidential majority, the popularity of President Kabila is still going down. He has only 18% of approval in October 2008, so his popularity is still going down despite the fact. But that can be explained by the fact that the majority of the people that we interviewed, 57% to be totally exact, did not approve of the designation of Chabary as presidential majority contender. He's very unpopular. So that can explain, I mean, the distrust in the whole process.
Recently, the opposition signed a memorandum of understanding with the view of coming up with a single candidate to challenge the ruling party coalition. Did this factor in your survey? And with this decision that you've taken, do you think they stand a chance of defeating Emmanuel Chabary?
Well, as it stands right now, I mean, if the election were held in October, the opposition would have won. Tshisekedi has 36% of the vote and is coming as the number one contender. And number two will be Vital Kamerhe, and number three will be Emmanuel Chabary with 16% and Vital Kamerhe with 17%. However, I mean, the results also show that Chabary is able to capture all the pro-Kabila votes. But on the other hand, you know, which it was, you know, consistently, you know, around 15 to 16% of all the survey that we have conducted since 2016. But when you look at the oppositions, which they have their vote reservoir, if I can speak that way, was about 80%, even though Félix Tshisekedi is coming up first with 36%, and we have Vital Kamerhe 17%. They're not able to capture the 60 to 80% of the potential vote that they do have within this election. So I really think it's crucial for them to actually unite to be able to actually win this election.
Francesca Bomboko is the head of the Congolese polling group BESI. She spoke with me from Brussels, Belgium.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has dismissed debate about his political future after 2022, saying he will retire when his second and final term ends. But there have been growing calls for a change of the executive, with an emerging line being the making of President Kenyatta an executive prime minister with a weakened 7-year one-term presidency. Such a change will require amending the constitution, which limits a president to a maximum of 2 terms each 5 years. Isaac Ongiri is a senior political reporter for the Daily Nation newspaper. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him in Nairobi by phone and asked him what he made of President Kenyatta's remarks.
I think in Kenya, given the state of our constitution, it hasn't been heard of yet that a sitting president would want to extend his stay in power. So I think what President Uhuru Kenyatta was stating was just a restatement of fact. That in Kenya, we are used to a situation where after a 2-year term, after 2 terms, the president will exit peacefully. I think that is probably what led to the statement he made the other day.
How about rumors of discussions to make him prime minister after his term has expired, with arguments that he's still too young to retire?
That is highly likely, because the people speaking about that are his close associates. And the other week, we had a situation where members of parliament from and senators from central Kenya had a meeting in Naivasha where they discussed the region's politics, and they pronounced themselves quite clearly, indicating that they would like a political situation in the future that will accommodate President Uhuru Kenyatta even after retirement. And so this is something very serious. President Uhuru himself nominated the cabinet secretary for ICT to represent him in the meeting. Definitely he was well briefed about what was going to happen there.
Is this related to the ongoing debate on the referendum, which might lead to some changes in the constitution?
I think so, and the body language of the politicians indicate that there probably something is cooking, because the other day we saw President Uhuru Kenyatta coming together with Deputy President William Ruto and Raila Odinga, probably to send some message to the population. And the creation of the position of Prime Minister is highly likely, so as to accommodate all the politicians for the next general election.
This should augur well for Kenyan politics, which has been known for a lot of rivalry and times leading some to violence. If the principles both in the opposition and the ruling party seems are trying to figure out a way of having it a smooth election.
Yeah, the past 3 elections have been very chaotic and not very peaceful. This situation would lead to a situation where we have a win-win situation for all the political establishment, and as such, it may be the solution to the problem we've had, where Kenya is a country that is ethnically divided, our politics is ethnic-based, and if you can't combine big ethnic forces, then you can't win the presidency. So if there's a way that each and every community may have access to power, even if it is through such kind of system and negotiations or a constitutional makeup, then the better for the country.
Isaac Ongiri is a senior political reporter for the Daily Nation newspaper. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from Nairobi. Coptic church sources in the southern Egyptian town of Minya say that at least 7 pilgrims died and 14 or more were wounded when terrorists attacked a bus carrying pilgrims to the St. Samuel the Confessor Monastery Friday. It is very close to the location of a similar assault in May 2017. For VOA, Edward Iranian reports from the Egyptian capital, Cairo.
Yeah.
Medics and rescue workers evacuate the wounded from a minibus carrying Coptic pilgrims to a monastery outside the southern Egyptian town of Minya Friday. A Coptic religious leader in Minya told Arab media terrorists sprayed the vehicle with automatic weapons, killing and wounding many, including women and children. Amateur video showed victims lying dead or wounded in their seats inside a small white minivan, which appeared to have most of its windows blown out. Another attack on a tourist bus carrying Coptic pilgrims to the St. Samuel the Confessor Monastery outside of Minya took place on the same road outside of the town in May 2017. Analysts on Arab media pointed to both regional and local factors that may have motivated the terrorists. Analysts on Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV say the attack might be related to the capture of Egypt's top terrorist Hussein Ashmawi by Libyan military forces in the coastal town of Darna in October. Terrorists in the 2017 terror attack reportedly infiltrated Minya using a desert road which leads to Libya. Libya's military spokesman, Colonel Ahmed al-Mismari, has repeatedly accused Qatar and Sudan of supporting the terrorists. Both countries deny the charges. Egyptian political sociologist Saeed Sadiq, however, thinks that Friday's attack probably has links to an Arab country's intelligence agency, but he believes it would be difficult to determine exactly which country. Sadiq believes that both Friday's attack on Coptic pilgrims and another attack by a woman suicide bomber in the Tunisian capital Tunis may be related. He argues that both attacks may be an attempt to divert media attention away from ongoing Western media coverage of the killing of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi in the Turkish city of Istanbul. The attack in Minya also took place just hours before Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi is due to open a youth conference in the Sinai resort town of Sharm el-Sheikh. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection. You will be hearing from Sheba with Try My Love, Nilante with 52 Ambulance, and Mafe Kizolo with Love Portion.
Try me. try my tingle, try my love, try my tingle. It's true, baby, your body's calling, baby, your body's calling, baby, your body's calling me. Yes, it's true, baby, your body's calling, baby, your body's calling, baby, your body's calling me. Messi yo makusa, kukwambia baby si yo makusa, kalibia pia si yo makusa. Kukwambia baby siyo makosa, kalibia pia siyo makosa, siyo makosa.
Nonsense be this, make I say these things I want,
Africa,
and where can sense be this,
nonsense.
Make you pass me my mic, make I free up my mind, I don't give a damn this time, yeah, yeah, only 52 ambulances,
pressure
for the people, yeah, 1,000 V8s for ministers, directors, Parliament enter 52 ambulances for my people, 1,000 V8s for ministers, directors, them take Parliament enter 52 ambulances, 1,000 V8 for the minister, them 52 ambulances, 1,000 V8 for the minister, them only 52 ambulances, 1,000 V8s for the minister, them people we bought 52 ambulances, 1,000 V8 for the director, them. It's the same.
Watch them.
We don't watch them.
I didn't watch them.
As they cruise 1,000 V8s in the city. We don't watch them.
I didn't watch
people. We for start vex.
Start vex.
We don't watch them.
In the streets, I didn't hear them say.
I this your bumbo clad thing. Must stop.
Excuse my French in this time. Too much bumbo clad thing. Too much rascal. Sucking our blood every day.
Them a rascal.
Too much foolishness I go on in this time.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Rascals.
Oh, nah, nah.
Only 52 ambulances, 1,000 V8 for the minister, them. 52 ambulances, 1,000 V8 for the minister, them. Only 52 ambulances, 1,000 V8 for the minister, them. People, we bought 52 ambulances, 1,000 V8 for the director, them.
Sometimes I sit and I wonder, where lies our priority, I ponder. 52 ambulances only for a nation of 30 million. Yet 1,000 V8 luxury cars for selfish politician with big money bullion. Tell me, when you do fall sick, would you need an ambulance? Or would you rather hang your life on a balance?
Only 52 ambulances, 1,000 V8 for the politician. 52 ambulances, 1,000 V8 for the politician. Only 52 ambulances, 1,000 V8 for the politician. We bought 52 ambulances, 1,000 V8 for the politician.
1,000 V8s.
Running around across the city.
What a waste. 1,000 V8s in the city. Just to suit their taste. Oh yeah.
talking about too. You know that I love you, baby. I'm phony one more, yeah, I want you, baby. I go do anything for you. Stand up for me, yeah. My baby, I've been thinking about you. What is it that you done to me, oh? Eh, jelonga tabanga. Sala tetanga. Did you pour me a love potion, oh? My babe, I can't stop thinking about you. Undenza Antonio, kuthenga la lebusuku. Esithandwa sami, baby, I've been thinking about you. Undenza Antonio, kuthenga la lebusuku. Baby, it's you. Oh, yeah. I cannot imagine life without you. Stand with someone, I'm thinking about you. Di tala ni teta ni teta ngawe. Tala ni pupa ngawe. Oh, yeah. Only this ain't only now. I just can't stop thinking about you. Baby, all I want is you. Baby, there's no one but you. Go by, you give me the juice. You bring me the juice. On dance, I'm done enough. I just can't stop thinking about you. On dance, I'm done you.
Please don't leave me there, oh, yeah. Oh, quit my love, be met you, boy. I feel kill any bugger for you. Baby, please don't go. Where the questions, me a minga. Girl, I just won't be afraid. Ya bomi na kupenda. Baby, please don't leave me, oh.
Where you want down to the ground, yeah? Come closer to Andre now.
Boy, me wanna give you everything. I know the light come take me everything. You're my magic switch. I need emergency. Hurry up, hurry up. I love you, I love you.
Chimanyi nga wechai. Amo tima kwa kuru menyo. Chimanyi wechai.
always tell her they kill him once they say cock up on day. I know God leave you alone tomorrow, I'm gonna make the wedding day. And I will love you from Monday up to Sunday. Yeah, yeah.
So let the rhythm play in your heart, my turn Sunday, baby.
Music I feel play.
Finyanga kama dona, makonde na ndonya, kama mpira Maradona, kichuya kona. Na wakisema na mawenge, wambie uweraso, wakiringisha peremende, nitakuga uyakon. Chunga kipenzi majaribu, mabaya sana, oh. Na wendo doktor kunitibu, niwe salama, oh. Oh baby, Anita. Macho kama unanita, sasita, kiuno kayondo sista, Anita. Macho kama unanita, sasita, kiuno kayondo sista.
Show me, show me, show me, una violence. Show me, show me, show me.
And you heard from Singer with Te Amo, Lydia Jasmine, and Daddy Andre with You and Me, and a Harmonized Show, Me Music Ending, music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, kindness is like butter. It works best when you spread it around. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.